Long before gardening apps, seed catalogs, or raised bed kits, Caribbean people were growing food by instinct and by inheritance. The elders didn't just plant crops. They listened to the soil. They watched the moon. They whispered prayers into the wind and placed bush remedies by the roots. In this episode, we're going back to the roots, literally. You'll hear about age-old Caribbean gardening traditions, from lunar planting cycles and spiritual garden blessings, to herbal knowledge and natural medicine passed down by grandmothers. This is more than farming. It's culture, it's connection, and it's still alive, if you know where to look. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The Garden as Sacred Ground. In the Caribbean, a garden isn't just a space for food. It's a sacred space, a place where life, death, healing, and history are all planted in the same soil. To the elders, gardening was never just about sustenance. It was a spiritual relationship with the land. Every seed placed was an offering, every harvest a blessing, and every act of tending the earth was guided by intention. The garden as a spiritual extension of the home. Many elders would sweep the garden paths every morning, not just to clear leaves, but to reset the energy. A prayer or psalm might be whispered before planting, especially when starting a new bed. Some would light a small candle or incense stick when preparing soil, asking for strength and protection. Tools were not used in anger. A machete thrown in frustration was seen as disrespecting the spirits of the land. The garden was often the first place visited after a funeral, after a storm, or during deep grief. It grounded people. It healed in ways the body couldn't always explain. Moon cycles and planting rituals. Long before weather forecasts, elders watched the moon. Planting by moon phase is a tradition found across African and indigenous cultures, and still quietly practiced today. New moon to waxing moon, ideal for planting leafy crops, callaloo, lettuce, pak choi, full moon to waning moon, better for root crops, cassava, carrots, yam, long before you, and one that deserves to be honored. Chapter 8. Stories Between the Rows, How Wisdom Was Passed Down in the Caribbean. Gardening lessons weren't always formal. You didn't sit in a classroom or follow a written manual. Instead, the most important knowledge was shared in conversation, in movement, and in quiet moments between tasks. These were the lessons passed down through oral tradition, from grandmother to grandchild, from uncle to nephew, from neighbor to neighbor, over sweet tea, fresh callaloo, or the sound of hands in the dirt. The story was the lesson. A child would ask, "Why do you plant the pepper tree near the corner?" And the answer wouldn't come as a rule. It would come as a story. "Your great-grandfather used to say the pepper kept away more than bugs. It watched over the whole yard. Your auntie had a mango tree here that only bore fruit after she stopped cursing under it. Me plant this time the week your brother was born. Every year since it come back strong." Through stories, the land itself became a living timeline, full of births, storms, funerals, and miracles. Singing in the garden songs were just as powerful as stories. Elders sang while sowing seeds, to set rhythm while weeding, to make the work lighter while harvesting, to give thanks. Some of the lyrics had meaning. Others just carried memory. Either way, they rooted the garden in joy and presence. Memory anchored in action. The knowledge wasn't just told, it was shown. A child would be handed a machete and taught how to cut without bruising the stem. They'd be told to feel the soil, not measure it. They'd learn how to tell a ripe breadfruit by sound, not sight. These weren't tasks. They were ceremonies of learning, quiet transfers of trust and tradition. Gardens held grief, too, sometimes. The garden was where grief was processed. Elders would tell stories of losing a parent and planting a tree in their memory, failing a crop and praying for guidance in the rain, planting a row of okra as a promise to do better next season. Even pain was planted, and somehow that helped it grow into healing. Why oral tradition still matters. In a world of instant information, it's easy to overlook these slow-spoken rituals. But oral tradition carries. Emotion that books can't build relationships between generations, keeps culture alive, especially in Caribbean communities shaped by displacement and migration. If we stop telling these stories, the garden may still grow, but the soul of it will fade. Key takeaway: gardening is more than what you do with your hands. It's what you pass on with your voice. Keep the stories alive. Ask questions. Share what you've learned. Tell your garden story, because that's how the legacy survives. Chapter 9, Keeping It Alive, Passing the Torch, Planting the Future. The elders may be aging, some have already gone, but their knowledge, if we hold it, if we share it, will never die. The garden is memory, but it is also future. And we are the bridge. The most valuable inheritance. You may not inherit land. You may not inherit wealth, but if someone taught you how to break soil after rain, rub a mint leaf between your palms to clear a headache, tie string beans with coconut twine, or simply sit in the garden with silence and gratitude, then you've inherited something priceless. This is ancestral capital, and it grows with use. Teaching the next generation children don't need perfection. They need invitation. Let them water the plants. Even if they splash too much, let them pick herbs, even if they break a stem or two. Let them ask the same question 5 times, because in that messy repetition, you're planting something deeper, belonging. Every memory tied to the garden becomes a root, and roots hold strong through storms. Modern tools, ancient wisdom. It's okay to use a garden app. It's okay to watch tutorials. But blend it with what the elders taught. Test your soil, but also smell it. Follow planting schedules, but also feel the moon. Read books, but also listen to your grandmother's voice when you're unsure. This is not about going backward. It's about carrying forward. Gardening as resistance. In a world that pushes fast food, artificial ingredients, and disconnection from land, gardening the way our elders did is an act of rebellion. Growing your own food means reclaiming health. Saving seeds means preserving culture. Blessing your soil means honoring spirit in a secular world. You don't have to own land to resist. You only need intention. Even one plant, in one bucket on one balcony, can carry ancestral power. Full circle. The elders taught without needing applause. They planted without expecting thanks. But if we carry what they gave us and share it forward, we become part of their legacy. We don't garden alone. Every time you sow, harvest, or boil bush tea, they are there, watching, smiling, knowing the work lives on. Final takeaway: this is more than gardening. This is memory work, soul work, legacy work. So whether you're tending a backyard, a window box, or a dream, do it with care. Do it with culture. Do it knowing you're not starting something new. You're continuing something sacred and transplanting dark moon just before new. Time to rest the soil or harvest herbs. These weren't myths. They were observations passed down over generations of trial, failure, and success. Blessing the garden. In many households, especially rural ones, you'd hear these phrases spoken over the garden. Grow strong and bring peace to the house. Let no evil eye spoil this ground. Feed us, and we will feed you. Some used holy water mixed with coconut water or herbs like basil to sprinkle over new beds. Others planted aloe vera near garden entrances for protection, believing it absorbed bad energy or sickness. Elders as quiet botanists. The elders may not have held degrees, but they knew which bush to boil for fever, which plant to rub on a rash, which roots were cooling and which were heating. Their gardens were both food and pharmacy, sometimes both at once. These weren't backyard hobbies. They were lifelines, systems of knowledge carried through slavery, colonization, hurricanes, and hunger. And still, they persisted. Key takeaway: to garden like the elders is to slow down, to observe, to feel. It's not just about what you grow, but how you grow, with reverence, patience, and respect for the energy that lives in the soil. Chapter 2, Herbal Knowledge, The Garden as Medicine Cabinet. Before pharmacies, there was the bush tea drawer. Before pills, there were leaves, roots, and bark gathered fresh from the yard. Caribbean elders didn't guess when it came to medicine. They had generations of knowledge stored in their minds and gardens. These remedies weren't trends. They were survival, and they still work. The healing plants. Our elders trusted sarsee, bitter melon vine, used to clean the blood, especially after eating oily or rich foods. Often boiled into tea for colds, rashes, and digestion. Bitter but powerful. Used in moderation. Lemongrass, fever grass, calms the nerves, lowers fever, and eases stomach aches. Brewed into tea or tied into bundles and steeped in bath water. Guinea hen weed, anamu, strong-smelling herb believed to fight infections and boost immunity. Used in spiritual cleansing baths as well. Aloe vera, applied directly to burns, cuts, and skin irritations. Inner gel consumed for digestion and cooling. The body mint and peppermint relieves nausea, settles the stomach, and clears sinuses. Kept near kitchen doors for quick access. Soursop leaf used for sleep anxiety and immune health. Brewed as a gentle evening tea. Spanish needle, blackjack, little weed with healing power. Crushed leaves used on wounds. Tea made for cold and flu. How remedies were passed down. This knowledge didn't come from books. It came from watching Grandma boil one thing, but not another. Listening to Grandpa list the 7 herbs he needed after a long day. Being sent to the bush with a plastic bag. And being told, pick the ones that smell sharp. Not too young, not too old. It was storytelling through practice. Healing the whole being. The elders didn't separate body and soul. If you had a fever, you got tea and a prayer. If your spirit felt heavy, you might get a bath made of basil, mint, and lime peel. If you were grieving, they handed you a hoe and told you to dig, because the earth helps you cry without judgment. Modern missteps. Today, people often try to commercialize bush medicine, bottling it, branding it, selling it fast. But the real healing was in the relationship. Knowing when to harvest, praying while picking, thanking the plant before cutting, using only what was needed, never wasting. It wasn't just medicine, it was ritual care. Key takeaway: your garden can be your medicine chest, but only if you treat it with the same respect the elders did. Learn the plants, listen to the rhythms, and understand that healing isn't just what you take, it's what you grow with care and intention. Chapter 3, Spiritual Gardening. Honoring the land beyond the physical. For Caribbean elders, gardening was as much a spiritual practice as it was a practical one. It wasn't just about food. It was about energy, intention, and ancestral presence. Before the first seed was sown, something deeper was already planted: reverence. Gardening as devotion elders often spoke to the land, sometimes aloud, sometimes silently. Protect this ground. Give back as I give. Let this be a place of peace. The act of gardening was not rushed. They moved slowly, thoughtfully, with bare feet in the soil, feeling its warmth or coolness, like checking the pulse of something alive. Rituals you'd see and feel, blessing the ground before planting, a cup of water poured into the earth with a whispered psalm, a piece of bread or a bit of rum left at the edge of the garden as a peace offering. Some would turn the soil and say a prayer for abundance, not just food, but peace of mind. Planting with purpose seeds were sometimes planted with names, a loved one's name spoken into the soil. This turned the harvest into an offering, a tribute. Protection practices aloe or prickly pear cactus planted near the gate to block bad eye, crushed lime and salt sprinkled at the garden's entrance, red cloth or marigolds tied near specific plants for spiritual shielding, lunar influence, more than just timing. Planting by moon phases was both practical and mystical. Some elders avoided planting on a dark moon because it was said to cause crops to die early. Others swore by planting certain bush remedies only during a waxing moon, when healing energy was rising. This wasn't superstition. It was observation, sharpened by devotion. Ancestral presence in the garden. You could often feel it. A grandmother's song while weeding, a father's voice in the rhythm of the hoe. The stillness between raindrops, where something holy lingered. Gardens were sacred because they held memory. And memory was sacred because it grew from struggle and care. Spiritual cleansing of the garden. Sometimes if a garden wasn't producing, elders didn't just check the soil. They checked the energy. They might burn dried herbs and walk the perimeter, bury 3 coins under a struggling plant, leave the garden untouched for 3 days to let the spirits cool. It was part faith, part healing, but always rooted in respect. Key takeaway: the elders didn't just grow food, they cultivated energy. They understood that the garden is alive, and anything alive deserves reverence. If you want your garden to truly flourish, don't just tend it with your hands, tend it with your spirit. Speak to it, thank it, honor it. That's the Caribbean way. Chapter 4, Companion Planting, The Wisdom of Growing. Together, elders in the Caribbean didn't always explain their choices with science, but their decisions were rooted in generations of lived observation. One of the clearest examples, companion planting. Without ever calling it by that name, our ancestors knew certain plants thrived when placed side by side, because nature works best in community. What is companion planting? It's the practice of planting different crops near each other to benefit one another. Some pairings repel pests, others improve flavor, attract pollinators, or balance soil nutrients. Elders learned this not from textbooks, but from watching what worked, season after season, garden after garden. Classic Caribbean plant pairings: corn plus beans plus pumpkin, the three sisters. Corn grows tall and strong. Beans climb the stalk and fix nitrogen in the soil. Pumpkin shades the ground, holding in moisture and blocking weeds. This trio, rooted in indigenous wisdom, was quietly preserved in Caribbean backyards. Tomatoes, Kais basil. Basil repels insects and is said to improve the flavor of tomatoes. Both thrive in similar conditions and look beautiful growing together. Scallion plus callaloo. Scallions deter pests and take up little space. Callaloo grows fast and benefits from scallion's protective scent. Marigold plus. Almost anything elders planted marigold around the garden edge, known to repel nematodes, beetles, and even spiritual negativity. Hot pepper plus cabbage family crops. The heat from peppers helps deter pests that target softer greens. Peppers also thrive with less competition and protect with intensity, the natural pest control system. Elders use scent, texture, and color to outsmart insects. Mint planted near beans to deter aphids. Garlic bulbs tucked between crops to keep away worms. Neem trees nearby for leaf infusions to protect the whole garden. It wasn't labeled organic. It was just common sense passed down like inheritance. Soil balance through diversity. Monocropping, planting one thing in a large space, was rare. Elders mix crops because different plants pull and return different nutrients. If one crop failed, another would thrive. Diversity attracts beneficial insects and confuses pests. A Caribbean garden wasn't uniform. It was alive with contrast and cooperation. Why this still matters today. Modern gardeners often space plants like soldiers in rows. But elders planted in clusters, borders, spirals, following the land's shape. and energy. That wasn't random. It was about harmony between plant and plant, human and soil, garden and spirit. Key takeaway: your garden isn't just about what grows. It's about what grows together. Companion planting isn't just efficient. It's ancestral wisdom in action. If you want a thriving, balanced, and low-maintenance garden, listen to what the elders knew all along. Nothing grows well alone. Chapter 5. Garden Layout. Designed by Wisdom, not Blueprints. If you walk through an elder's garden, it might not look like much at first. There are no laser straight rows, no fancy fencing, no designer beds. But look closer, and you'll see something deeper. Intention. Every tree, every plant, every path exists for a reason. The layout isn't about decoration. It's about function, rhythm, and care passed down over generations. Paths made with purpose elders never trampled the same ground where they planted. They left narrow footpaths between beds, not just to avoid damage, but to allow the earth to rest and breathe. These paths were swept clean, sometimes daily. This wasn't just for tidiness. It was about respect. A clean path meant you honored the space where your food came from. Trees at the edges, never the center fruit trees, like mango, guava, soursop, and avocado, were usually planted along the perimeter of the garden, not in the center. Why? They offered shade, but didn't block full sun for smaller crops. Their fallen leaves created natural mulch for bordering beds. The roots stayed mostly out of the way of annual vegetables. Underneath these trees, you'd often find a bench, a stool, or a rock, because elders knew that a gardener needs a place to rest. Sun, wind, and flow. Elders didn't use soil tests or solar charts. They used observation. The sun comes over the house that way in the morning. That spot stays damp too long after rain. The breeze from the sea passes here strong at midday. From that, they chose where to plant. Hot weather crops went in the fullest sun. Herbs and leafy greens were tucked where afternoon shade softened the heat. Plants needing good drainage were put on sloped or sandy patches. It was quiet science, earned through watching and waiting. Use what you have fencing, often made from coconut fronds, bamboo poles, or old zinc sheets. Raised beds, created with stones, broken concrete, or even discarded wooden doors. Trellises for vines, made with recycled clothesline, tree limbs, or fishing net. Nothing was wasted. Everything was repurposed with care. A garden that heals the whole household. Most elder gardens included a section for medicinal plants, bush tea herbs, aloe, turmeric, a corner for fragrant plants, for both cooking and spiritual use, a cool spot near the back, where shade-loving vegetables or yam vines grew, a place to burn dry leaves or bury food scraps, quiet forms of composting. In essence, the garden wasn't just a food space. It was a living system, providing food, medicine, shade, beauty, and spiritual grounding. Key takeaway: a garden doesn't need symmetry to have structure. It needs intention. Let the land guide you. Place with purpose. Think in terms of energy, sunlight, and balance. The elders didn't follow blueprints. They followed the language of the land, and it told them exactly where everything should go. Chapter 6. The Proverbs That Teach. Gardening Wisdom in Spoken Word. Before how-to books, before video tutorials, and long before search engines, Caribbean elders taught through proverbs. Short, rhythmic, and packed with truth, these sayings carried farming wisdom in a way that stuck, not just in memory, but in practice. The garden was a classroom, and the proverbs, the curriculum. Why proverbs matter. Proverbs aren't just clever sayings. They are condensed life lessons, simple enough for a child to remember, wise enough to guide an elder. In the garden, these sayings shaped everything, from when to plant, to how to react when crops failed, to what mindset to carry into the field. Proverbs you might hear in the garden: 1-1 cocoa full basket. Translation: take your time. Small efforts add up, meaning Don't rush the harvest. Every little action matters. Plantain can't bear banana. Translation: you reap what you sow. Meaning, put care into what you plant, because the result will reflect your effort. Time longer than rope. Translation: patience outlasts every problem. Meaning, seasons change. Don't give up on a bad harvest or slow progress. Rain don't fall on one man house. Translation: trouble and blessing come to all. Meaning, don't compare your garden to your neighbor's. We all face our own cycles. If you want good, you nose huffy run. Translation: you must endure discomfort to get reward. Meaning, gardening is work, but it pays off. When you see ant, follow it back to food. Translation: observation brings wisdom. Meaning, pay attention to nature's clues. Ants, birds, and bees lead you to what's growing. How these proverbs were passed down. You wouldn't sit down for a formal lesson. The learning came in context. You complained about digging beds? An elder replied, if you want good, you nose halfy run. You wanted to give up on callaloo that wouldn't grow. They'd say, one cocoa full basket. You questioned why the mango tree didn't fruit this year? Time longer than rope, they'd remind you. The words would echo long after. While planting, while harvesting, even when walking through the empty garden. Why listening was part of gardening. The elders listened to the land and expected others to listen to them. Because the Proverbs didn't just explain plants. They explained life. To ignore a proverb was to ignore generations of trial and error, of resilience, of survival. Key takeaway: if you want to grow like the elders, learn to listen as much as you plant. The soil speaks through signs. And the elders? They speak through proverbs. Remember them. Repeat them. Pass them on. Chapter 7: Spirit in the Soil. Ancestors, Nature, and the Unseen Garden. For many Caribbean elders, the garden wasn't just full of plants. It was full of presence. It was a place where the living and the spirit world overlapped. A sacred borderland where ancestors lingered. Nature had power, and every action carried energy. To garden was to enter into a relationship with the seen and the unseen. The ancestors walk beside you. Elders often believe that ancestors walk the land, especially in the early morning or just after rainfall. That's when they said the veil between worlds was thin, and you could feel your grandmother's hand on your shoulder while weeding or hear a grandfather's cough in the rustling of banana leaves. Because of this belief, certain practices were respected. No swearing or loud arguing in the garden. You might offend a watching. Spirit asks permission before cutting an old tree, especially if it feels like it's been watching you. Leave a small offering, a fruit, a coin, a sip of rum, before harvesting a heavy crop. It wasn't superstition. It was about honor and balance, nature spirits and energy fields. Many elders believed in duppies, jumbies, and other spirit forms, not as fantasy, but as real energy patterns in the land. A plant that repeatedly failed in one corner of the garden? It might be a spirit place. Best to leave it alone or plant a protective herb there. Strange smells or heavy feelings while gardening. Time to cleanse the space with smoke or prayer. A child constantly falling ill after playing in one spot? That area would be sprinkled with lime, ashes, or salt to neutralize the energy. These weren't fairy tales. They were tools of survival, rooted in African cosmology, indigenous earth beliefs, and post-colonial spiritual adaptation. Cleansing the garden. Spiritual maintenance was part of gardening. It was normal to burn dry herbs like basil, sage, or guinea hen weed, and walk the perimeter. Use salt and water to cleanse tools and planting areas. Wash hands in lime water after touching certain plants or burying offerings. These rituals weren't done out of fear, but out of respect for balance. Seasonal rituals and watch days. Some elders refused to plant or harvest on certain days. These were known as watch nights, spirit-heavy evenings when the air felt charged. Rest days, not just for the body, but for the land moon days, especially full moons or eclipses, when the soil was considered spiritually active. The grandmother's new elders, especially women, were often the spiritual anchors of the garden. They knew which plants to use for cleansing, not just healing, could feel when something was off without seeing it, didn't garden without prayer and their greatest wisdom. They didn't rush anything. They waited, listened, moved only when the land allowed. Key. Takeaway. To truly understand Caribbean gardening, you have to understand its spiritual foundation. The land is not just earth. It's memory, presence, and power. Whether or not you believe in spirits or ancestors, know this. When you step into the garden, you step into a story that began